Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Tuesday. We're going to talk USC Fall Camp 2018 with Dan Weber, beat writer and columnist for us here at USCFootball.com. It's been a crazy first 3 days of camp. We've got so much content going up. There's been all kinds of recruiting news. A bunch of prospects have committed to USC over this time frame, like right when fall camp's going on. So it's so crazy. You have to go to USCFootball.com front page and keep up. We actually have a promotion going today on Tuesday that goes till midnight. So if you're listening to it on Tuesday, we're trying to do this early enough where you can listen to it. You buy 1 month at $9.95 and you get 4 months free. So you basically the whole rest of the year, all the content you could want for $10. No one puts up more content. And Dan Weber's one of our star content providers who's joining us right now. What's up, Dan? How you doing?
You're right. I don't think I've ever seen a few days like the last few days. The combination of commitments and starting of practice and all the storylines in practice and what have you. I mean, we're in the middle of it. It's hard to keep up with it. So it would be nice if the fans would be allowed to come to practice, maybe. It's a whir. It's just a blur, kind of. This week, six practices, five in pads, two full pads, and one scrimmage. And I tend to agree with Clay. This is really an important week for this football team. I know yesterday, Monday, was a big, big day, the first day in pads. There's just a lot going on. And that's fun.
It is a lot going on. It is fun. It's busy, busy for us. I'm just, feel like I'm working till midnight and then getting up at six and working some more. But that's for all of you guys out there. There is tons of content, whatever you like. If you want photos, you want videos, you want stories, you want analysis, anything you could possibly want. You want podcasts, you want live shows. We got all that stuff going up on USCFootball.com. For this show, if you have any questions or comments, podcast@uscfootball.com is the email address, or you can call or text us 424-254-9141. We've got emails, we got texts, we got voicemails, we got to do a lot today. So before we jump into all that, I want to thank our sponsor, Trader Joe's. They've been great to us, and we're trying to finalize something. And Dan Weber came up with a good idea for the Jock Rally. I think we might do something for that. We're still working on it. That would be the night before the UNLV game, which I believe would be August 31st, right? The UNLV game is September 1st. But Trader Joe's, we've been working with them past year or so. It's been wonderful. It's been a great relationship. Dan and I both love shopping at Trader Joe's. It's funny how many meals a day my wife makes. And she's like, this was from Trader Joe's and this was from Trader Joe's. So just go walk down the aisles, check out some stuff that you might like. Experiment with something you haven't tried before. There are a lot of options at Trader Joe's. I love getting all kinds of stuff. I'm more of a snack guy. I like snacking on things, but my wife will like pick out different pieces and put like an entree and some appetizers and stuff together. So I don't know what you like to get there, Dan, but there's a lot of stuff I like.
I like walking down the aisles, to be honest, and just checking stuff that I hadn't seen. Usually it's stuff I like, but I didn't know you could get, somewhere. And so I'm not the biggest adventurer in terms of food, but what they surprised me with is, oh, you've got that stuff. Okay. Wow. I like that. Okay. So that's my Trader Joe's story.
Yeah, and the bags are always very popular, so we're going to have some event sometime this month. We'll let you know where you can come pick up some of those bags. I was at the concerts at the beach in Hermosa Beach yesterday. I saw a bunch of people with the Trader Joe's USC bags, so it's fun. They're popular, so we'll try to be able to get them to you, and we'll let you know as soon as we possibly can. As soon as we plan something, we'll let you know. But think about the Jock Rally for UNLV. If you want to be there Friday night before the game, that would be a good one. All right, Dan. So we've had two practices, Friday, Saturday, no pads, Sunday off, take a day of rest. They're not practicing at all on Sunday for fall. Then Yesterday, which was Monday, they were at it in shoulder pads. It looked a lot different. You know, I talked to Matt Fink extensively. We put that up on uscfootball.com. You can hear the whole conversation. I put notes and video and stuff. He had some high praise for his offensive linemen, saying they're the best in the country. The defensive line is the best in the country. But there was a lot of pressure. There was a bunch of snaps on the ground for the second day, second practice in a row. We're going to go out there this afternoon, another shoulder pads practice. Do you think it's going to get cleaned up a little bit on the offensive side, or is it still going to be a defensive-dominated thing?
I thought the offense had some things going for him. But I think the first day in pads actually helped the offense a little bit. And so what you had yesterday was just tough situations for the offense, some third and longs, and all-out blitzes. You know, somebody asked, were they in a base defense? And I said, not really. They were basically coming. And that's good. I mean, they want to, you don't have a lot of time to figure out who the quarterback has to be. But I think that the best thing that's going to happen is by the defense coming and playing that way is not only do you, get a good idea about the quarterback, you really get a good idea about your offensive line, and they've got to bring it every day. And I think that was the mistake, and that's been the failing of, and probably have said it 1,000 times, that you got to play, full speed. You got to play the way the game is played. That's how you got to practice. And that was the, the genius of great coaches, and it was a genius, obviously, of Pete Carroll. And now that they've got a full roster and they feel like they've got the depth and they know they have to do it because of the quarterback situation, I think all that's working together well. And one of the things you find out, for example, is if you've got a problem snapping the ball, face it, Toa Lobanon has played a whole lot more football at tackle and guard than he has at center. And, just because, size-wise and experience-wise and all that, you think, well, adding center to his resume really helps him at the next level and all that, you still have to be able to execute that. And you find out right away if you have to, start looking some other direction and, looking at another position for Toa and all that. But you want to find that out right away, and you find it out if you're going all out the way they were going all out yesterday. So that was, I think, a good thing. And now you just see where you go the next few days. But that's why it's so important to practice it at that tempo, at that speed, and just go all out. And that was a really positive thing, I think, that happened yesterday. That was a big day for USC football yesterday.
The good thing about this is we have a bunch of eyes out there from our site. So everyone's kind of given different opinions. You might see different things. You might see a guy drop two balls, but when you turn your head, he caught three more. That's hard. There's all these things that happen. You can't obviously watch everything. And now they're doing this two spotting, which I think they call it, is where they're doing multiple sets of offenses and defenses at once. Running, I think, the same plays most of the time, but you're trying to get as many reps as possible. So that makes it a little bit more challenging. You might have people on the far side of the field. Some days it's a Jack Sears or a Matt Fink, and you can't see them as well because they're behind a whole bunch of bodies and stuff. But to me, Dan, I mean, it did seem like I'm not worried about Toa Lobanon. If I was a USC fan, I wouldn't be worried about him. There have been some snapping problems for sure, not just him. I think some of the other guys too. And it just seems sometimes like the play is called and one of the offensive linemen doesn't move or doesn't seem to block the right direction. There's some missed assignments. It seems a little, I don't want to say sloppy, but it seems like it's not really tight yet. And maybe that takes some time. But I think, with all the walkthroughs and everything that they've done, you kind of would expect them to at least be on the same page. And I don't know, just from what I've viewed, Dan, I just haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, I think it was tighter. So I'll take this. They were going full speed, and there were fewer missed assignments. Not many. I think it's the kind of thing that if you're in that situation that they were in yesterday with the third and longs and blitzes, if you miss an assignment, that's the end of the play.
Yeah.
So I mean, I think it was more obvious that they missed the sign. I was surprised that, you know, there really were. I didn't think there were that many. I do think I like it that they go from, you know, one to the next to the next. You got to jump in there and be ready if you're alternating in a position. You know, you're not going to have time to, you know, to think about it. And if you miss the count, you're going to, you know, you're going to be in trouble. I thought one of the good things was, I guess T. Martin was talking about how J.T. Daniels, for example, handled all the protections perfectly against the blitz. Well, that's really good. I mean, that's gigantic that, you know all the things he can do, but you don't, I mean, he wasn't handling that, you know, kind of a defense and that kind of a blitz and having to get those kind of protections right last year, you know, as good as modern day was and as sophisticated as the stuff they run is, he wasn't having to face what he faced yesterday. And for him to be able to, you know, go out there and do it first time out, to me, that's really important. Finding somebody who's going to be on the right count every single play, they'll find. I think they've got a chance to find that guy. You know, that guy. If you've got a position where, you know, either you know the snaps aren't there, or somebody not getting the count, or whatever, they're not focused in. I thought I saw a little bit more out of the second offensive line than I thought I was going to see maybe after PRPs, and that's. Clay, you know, was fairly upbeat yesterday, thinking maybe we do have a full two deep on the offensive line. I think you need to be two deep on the offensive line because you need somebody pushing everybody. You can't just have them settled in where, you know, four of the five starters from last year and then two guys at the left tackle spot, and they just all settle into those spots and say, okay, we're good. You don't want that. You want somebody pushing those guys. And if you're going to have trouble at any particular spot, you want somebody else that can step in there. And I think we're seeing a little bit of that. And that's probably the most difficult place, I think, on this team is the offensive line, is to have enough guys behind those guys that are ready to step in and push them. And like, for example, I thought one of the real tragedies of last year was what happened on the short week at Washington State, and Toa comes down with, you know, the staph infection, and Vianney gets hurt, and they go up there with some backup guys. And it was like, well, how do you expect us to be able to run our offense? We had to put backup guys in, and we can't run up, you know, against that mighty Washington State defense. I know that was, you know, just total, that was total BS. I mean, that was every bad excuse in the book. And that can't happen at USC. You can't be in a situation where you're not prepared for Washington State because you got a couple injuries on the offensive line. No, you got to get it done. And a lot of times you're going to get it done with that next line guys. And, I mean, you like the idea that over the years, Nico Fowler has stepped in, or, let's see, Jordan Austin, I guess, stepped in, when that happens, those guys have to be ready to play. And I do think, you know, getting more reps in is going to help, and getting more reps in against pressure, and that's what yesterday was, is going to help. So I think it was a plus. I think they were better by the end of the day yesterday than when they started. And you couldn't say that a lot of times last year. A lot of times last year you said, well, they got through. They got their steps down. They know where they're supposed to line up, blah, blah, blah. I think, you know, after yesterday, you had a sense of, okay, it looks like they can play at this speed and you know, not be not quite ready when they, you know, run up against the Notre Dame all fired up at home, have 2 weeks to get ready for them, or Washington State all fired up at home, or in Ohio State trying to make up for how bad they looked the year before in a bowl game, and just, you know, can't really compete physically. You got to compete every day in practice physically in order to be ready to, you know, to compete, especially against the, you know, the top level teams. And the other thing I thought was really good is Clay said these guys are playing with a massive chip on their shoulders. I like that. I mean, I just think good guy Clay, one of the problems has been everybody's kind of happy. And I don't think you can play football at that level without a chip on your shoulder. You got to be kind of PO'd at everybody. And, you know, be happy after the game, but go into it not very happy at all. And I think this is a team that when you look at, you know, how people are thinking about them, this is a team that ought to have a chip on its shoulder. I mean, if you got a succession, if you're one of these kids and you're a succession of top five recruiting classes, and the best you can, you know, be in a preseason is 15th. I don't know if you saw this. Sports Illustrated just came out today, I guess, yesterday. They're top 25. No USC, not in the top 25. The only Pac-12 South team in the top 25 is Arizona. Arizona is picked to win the Pac-12 South, and Washington picked to be in the playoffs. If I'm USC, that really makes me upset. And so I think they ought to play like that. They really, and you know, everybody that's on their schedule is picked in top 25 except USC. I mean, Arizona's picked to beat them. Washington's picked to, if they would happen to get them. Notre Dame's picked to beat them. Texas is picked to beat them. You know, if you're on USC's schedule, they're picking you, not USC. If I'm USC, that really makes me mad.
Yeah, I think that's great. I mean, you need that chip on your shoulder. People talk about the Ohio State game, the offensive line. There's a lot of that. So we'll see. You know, we're seeing a little bit more fire practice. So I think that should help. I've been really impressed with the defense, and I think the depth has helped, and they can do the two spotting with that. I'm just still a little skeptical, Dan. Are the guys up front? We'll see. I think that's a key factor. But we got to, you know.
I think you should. I agree. I think you should be. Yeah, I'm skeptical, which is why. The thing I think the X factor is figuring out what exactly they can do with those guys where they are. What can you do with them? Do you have to do more, you know, four wides and depend on a freshman quarterback who just has an unbelievable arm in terms of accuracy and timing? What do you do? Do you go with some things that USC's not gone with before? Do you go with a running quarterback more? We saw that in practice yesterday. I mean, they haven't had guys like Jack Sears and Matt Fink who can take off with the ball. They get, you know, they drop back and they don't see anything right away. I'd much rather have them taken off like they did yesterday than trying to throw it into a crowd or throw it somewhere where they're not sure of throwing the ball. I mean, I don't mind JT throwing that really tough throw, because I think he can make it. But as far as the other two, I like the idea of them taking off. And I don't know that we've seen it where they seem to be really not only encouraging, but, you know, just letting a quarterback know that's the perfect thing for you to do. And Jack and Matt both do it. And that will be a shock to people playing USC, because you just haven't seen USC quarterbacks do that. But you would like to see them coach up Jack and Matt a different way than they coach JT. And it looks like that's happening. And I like that, because they're going to let JT make those difficult throws, and they're not necessarily going to ask the other two guys to do that. And again, that's good coaching.
Yeah, I think it's been good coaching. I've been impressed with the quarterbacks, talking to Matt Fink yesterday. It's a little strange. I think sometimes the defensive line was getting pressure. He complimented the defensive line, saying they're the best in the country. But then you're like, well, I don't want to throw my guys up front under the bus. So he said the offensive line was the best in the country. I think it was just kind of more like that. But just seeing them out there playing, Fink had a couple, you know, he had a couple nice deep balls. One would be caught for a touchdown. Another one would be dropped. Jack Sears started the first 2 days, and I'm putting together stats. I'm taking stats for every quarterback, every throw during competitive periods. And I can kind of share a little bit right now. The first 2 days, I think Jack Sears was over 90%, Dan. And then he was like 11% or something yesterday. So it wasn't as good. But he had two really good days throwing the ball. I think it's been more in the, like, the 50s or so. And then JT Daniels has been more like in the 60s, but there's not a lot of throws every practice. So you kind of have to look at the whole numbers, and, you know, I'll keep compiling those and put them together. But all three of the guys, I thought, have played better. I thought Fink and Sears both have played better than what we saw in the spring. And one thing Matt Fink was emphasizing was that having JT Daniels there was just going to up the competition. It was going to make things, they're just higher stakes. And I think, you know, I'm not saying anyone's winning. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, but it seems like the stakes have been raised and Jack Sears and Matt Fink have stepped up their game.
Yeah, I think you can make the case, you know, in different ways, you know, and the kids, I think, are making their own, you know, decisions. And Brian Ellis said, you know, by the end of this, the kids will know, you know, who the guy is. I mean, I think the one difference is JT can make all the difficult throws. In this offense, you're very often asked to make difficult throws. Now, whether that should be the case or not, it is the case. So I do think the difference between, and one of the big pick-me-ups since spring is, I thought spring was a downer because the players were looking at the quarterback play and saying, holy crap, are we going to have to shut people out to win games? Now I think the fact that they've all come in here, they've gotten to see JT in the PRPs, and they've seen Matt and Jack just come back with a different look about them. I think that's kind of picked everybody up, that they all have that sense of, you know, we're going to be all right here. I mean, I do think it's hard to expect Matt or Jack to be able to make some of those difficult throws. They just, you know, Jack had really had some good days. And yet there were a couple of times where guys are wide open and the ball, you know, sails one direction or bounces another. Whereas if that was JT, you could have written down the completion before the ball left his hand. I mean, it's just, he's more of a machine. He's got a talent that's really unusual. I mean, he is advertised. I don't think there's any question. I caught Clay just a little bit after practice. He was heading in to, you know, look at some video. And only thing he would like to see is just speed it up a little bit against that defense, which is what you would expect of, you know, a kid coming out of high school. It's his first time in pads against, you know, a college defense, against a pretty athletic college defense that we hope is going to be as good as we think it can be. But again, he makes plays. I mean, he's got the ability to throw the ball outside the numbers. I mean, there are guys that they're drafting in the NFL in the first round who they're not completely sure can throw that pass outside the numbers. And JT already, you know, without any question of a doubt, he can throw the ball outside the numbers. I mean, he makes it look so easy. It's now, you know what, when you would talk to Jordan Palmer or Sam Darnold about him and they rave about the things he can do. When you see him do some of these things, you say to yourself, now I see what they're talking about. That ability to just throw that, you know, that 18 yard, you know, post, stop out, that, out. You know, just it couldn't have been easier. I mean, he's got a certain ability, but the idea that they're coaching the other two guys to take advantage of their skill sets and the fact that they can, if they don't like what they see right away, you know, tuck it and go. That's an element we haven't seen in the USC offense. I mean, they didn't really let Sam do that, much less certainly didn't encourage him to. And that's not the case now. And one of the advantages you've got is, you know, you talk about a running quarterback. If you've got a running quarterback, the thing you need is two running quarterbacks. Because you got one and he goes down, you very often don't have somebody who can kind of do the same thing. If you've got two guys that can do it, you can be a lot more encouraging of him to, you know, take off and go with it. And I think that's helped both of those guys with their own, you know, their own confidence. So, unlike what we thought we were going to see out of the spring, you've got three pretty good, pretty confident quarterbacks back there. I don't think any of us saw that coming.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, we should probably jump into these questions, but the first one has to deal with the quarterbacks. So obviously that's what a lot of the talk is going to be about. And that makes sense because you want to know who the quarterback is. This is from Jared. He said, quick question on the coming quarterback decision. Is there a possible scenario where either Fink or Sears is more consistent in camp than Daniels, but Daniels is given the starting position because he has a higher ceiling?
Well, I don't even know. I think it's interesting because they're not calling the same plays for him. They're not running the same offense exactly. So you'll see JT is being asked to throw some more difficult stuff. And so, which I think makes sense. They're different quarterbacks, so they probably need to be coached that way. I don't think that's always the way it's been, and I've been to NFL camps where, you know, they've got three different guys and they make them run the same play over. The same guys, they all run the same play. And you think, man, they're not the same quarterback. They don't have the same skill set. But I like what they're doing here in terms of individually, you know, calling plays that I think work for each of these guys. So I don't know that you're going to be able to say absolutely that you can, you know, compare the three of them in terms of consistency because they're not playing the same team. I mean, it's the kind of thing that makes me upset when they talk about, like in Sports Illustrated, and Washington had the best defense by far in the Pac-12 in yards per play and yards and all that. And you think, well, yeah, but they didn't play anybody in their non-conference. They didn't play Notre Dame. They didn't play, Texas. They didn't play. So some of those stats don't necessarily work. I don't want to put Ryan down in terms of his stat work with the quarterback, but they are asking them to make a lot of different kinds of throws based on, I think, what works for each of those guys. So I think they're going to make a decision more on not so much just on stats, but who do they feel comfortable with and who with the offense they're going to go out on the field with, who can execute it the best and move it. And I think the difference, as you saw yesterday, was you have a much better chance on third and long, I would think, at this point, with JT Daniels' arm. He can make throws that get you first downs, difficult throws. It just is the big difference, I think.
Yeah, 100%. I don't think, you know, I'm just putting these stats together for fans' perspective, but just because Jack Sears, if he was completing 90% of his balls, if he's not doing what the coaches want him to do and he's not doing, you know, that a lot of that stuff I don't think matters all that much. Yeah, I mean, if you're completing more passes, you probably have a better shot, but there's a lot more that's going into this. And you got to see, you know, there's a lot that the coaches are looking for. And one of those things that you talked about was some of the throws that JT Daniels makes, you're like, I don't know if the other guys could make that throw. And it's interesting. So you talk about his arm strength. Eric in Duck Country wants to know, how would you compare JT Daniels to Matt Barkley, another guy that started as a true freshman quarterback? Thanks as always, Eric in Duck Country.
JT's he's more of a machine. He's just more of a absolute execute the same throw over and over and over again. Matt was a little more of a slinger, where JT is more just has a, you know, I was trying to think of who he reminded me of, and not body type or anything, but a guy like a Troy Aikman, who didn't have an arm that you said, wow, look at that. But everything was where it was supposed to be. And there was an execution where it just over and over and over again. And I think that's where JT is, that kind of a guy who just seems to be able to execute the throw. I mean, I think, for example, there are third and longs that they will call for JT that they would not call for the other two quarterbacks, because they're going to require a throw that you're just not sure that you want to ask them to make. So some of that's going to come down to what does the USC game plan call for? What do they want to be running in these different situations, and who do they want, you know, who do they want to be running it? But I do think they're doing the right things in preparing the quarterbacks to get, you know, the maximum out of each of the quarterbacks. And they're not, for example, they're not holding back on JT because he's a freshman. I mean, they're not. I like that a lot. I mean, Matt Leiner, for example, when he started, they at that Auburn game, Norm Chow and Pete, they didn't trust Matt with the whole offense at all. I don't think that's the case with JT. I think they're, you know, I think they're just and they're trusting him to make the tough throws. So it's kind of a different world, you know. 15 years later. They expect a lot more out of young quarterbacks if they've got that kind of, you know, talent.
And he certainly does. Well, let's talk about some other players. Jason in Longhorn Country, what are your thoughts on Keyshawn Pye Young at wide receiver?
You know, they got a lot of guys at wide receiver. And I think it's been more difficult for him with the two freshmen who stepped in, Amon-Ra and St. Brown and Devin Williams, have really made an impression, you know, in terms of physical, their physical abilities, their size, their speed, their toughness. They did a great job in conditioning in the summer, did a great job on PRPs, and picked right up, you know, making tough plays. They do not look like freshmen. So if you're in that second tier of, you know, wide receivers, it's been a battle to, you know, to get yourself noticed. I think Josh Amater-Bebe and Trevon Sidney have made some inroads there. But the addition of those two guys, the two freshmen, you know, in that, say, next group from Tyler Vaughns and Michael Pittman, make it a little tough if you're in that, you're in that, you know, next group trying to get noticed. There's, you know, you can only throw so many passes and run so many plays in practice. And you just, you know, owe it to yourself to give, you know, to give a lot of shots to Amon-Ra and Devin. I mean, they're just, they're so impressive.
We also had a question about from Tarek. Do Levi Jones and John Houston look bigger to you?
I think so. I don't know that either one of them. I don't think big. I mean, you know, they're certainly tall enough. I mean, they, you know, they're the 6'3" kids and you know, rangy, long arms. They're never going to be run, you know, fillers. They're never going to be guys that are going to step up into that, you know, in the A gap and just, you know, take on a fullback and that's just not what they do. But they can run to the football. Levi the other day, I think he was nearly 30 yards downfield when he broke up a pass. He's got, you know, he and John Houston can fly. They can run to the, you know, run to the sidelines, run to the quarterback. I think that's what they're gonna do. But you know, they filled out a little, but I don't think that's just not the role that they see for those guys. They want them to fly to the football and figure out how to get there, you know, some way, and to be on assignment, you know, perfect, always be where you need them to be. And so I think that's the key for that position.
Let's see. All right. We had, you're right there. We got a couple more. Let's see. Well, we got more than a couple more. Sorry about that. Nick in Cyprus, Big Nick, 21 USC from the P. What is your opinion early in fall camp, on what I believe will determine this season, both the defensive and the offensive lines, and who do you think starts at left tackle?
You know, I'm not even, I'm going to try to guess. I want them to decide that. You know, since we haven't even had a single full pads day, we'll let them decide who's going to start at left tackle. I think some of it will be, you know, do you miss any counts? Are you, you know, still in your stance when the, you know, the ball is snapped and that kind of thing? Yeah, I think obviously you've got to have guys that can play at both sides of the line, and that was what, you know, got Pete going early on. I still like the way Sean Cody talks about how he and Jacob Rogers went against each other every day, and Jacob Rogers, they would study film, and Jacob Rogers would look at what the offensive lineman that Sean Cody was going to face was going to be doing. And Sean Cody would look at what the defensive lineman that Jacob Rogers was going to face was going to be doing. And they would give each other, and they were smart enough and good enough to be able to give each other that look in practice that week. And one of the things that tells you is, obviously, you had the ones going against the ones. And when you have All-Americans going against All-Americans, they get better. And that really is what's one of the reasons they all keep telling you, yeah, our practices were tougher in our games. Well, one of the reasons was they weren't going against All-Americans in games like they were in practice. So, I mean, that's the kind of thing where you really have to develop. We haven't seen guys yet get themselves to that level where you would pick somebody on the USC offensive or defensive line right now, not counting the outside linebackers, but that you would say, wow, that guy's an All-American, and he's going to make the guys across from him better. I think they've got to get to that place where they really start, you know, becoming forces. Now, Chuma Adoga, he's 10 pounds heavier. He's 305. I don't know that I ever thought Chuma would ever get to be 305. And he's got the skill set. If he gets his head, you know, where, you know, on every play and is able to, you know, be that guy, he makes the defense that much better every day in practice. So I think that's the big key. And the fact that they are going hard and full out and 11 on 11 and ones against ones, that's a big jump up. It gives USC a chance to get better in a hurry, I think, over last year. So, you know, we'll see, you know, where that goes. But that's what I think you have to have is good players making other good players better because they compete in practice all out. And, again, you know, we railed about it. We screamed about it. We yelled about it. We jumped up and down about it for a long time that wasn't happening. It looks like it is. And that's a good thing.
We have Don wrote in. He's got a series of questions, so maybe we'll just kind of rapid fire them. Do you think Wale, so he's talking about Oluwole Batiku, has shown improvement since he has enrolled? He was a five-star coming out of high school, if you remember.
Yeah, I mean, the lack of, you know, a lot of football experience, I think has hurt. And he's kind of a tight kid. He's a wonderful, you know, personality, just a terrific kid. The inability to exactly find the right position for him and then to have the hip surgery, I think gives him a natural break here to figure out where does he go and what does he do. I know there was some talk about he was going to be able to maybe become a Rasheem Green type player and put on that extra weight. I'm not and go down, you know, get down in the defensive line, kind of play that, you know, hybrid, defensive end tackle spot. I'm just not sure when I look at him whether his body will take, you know, and go from, you know, 255 or whatever to 275. I'm not sure. So I don't think we know, you know, where Oluwole ends up. I don't know that he's the guy to be playing out in space. I don't think he's an out in space guy. I don't think he's a guy that you want, you know, to drop into coverage. So I think it's just so important for him to, you know, to get a sense of this is, you know, what I can do. This is where I belong on the football field. And, you know, that's going to take time. And so having an extra year maybe with hip surgery, because he hasn't been in action at all, this year, and probably not expected to be, although he's out there, he had his pads on with his helmet, but he's not doing the calisthenics and stretching and not really, you know, participating, but he's out there. But so far, no, he's not been able to, you know, improve or find a spot for himself.
And I apologize. Don had more about Wale on that one. I'll just read what you said. I think you answered what he was saying, though. He said, do you think he's improved enough to contribute? The few times I've seen him on the field, He looked more like a dance partner with the offensive lineman than rather than a defensive end or outside linebacker when he enrolled. I was hoping he would be something special. So I think that's just what the, where that question was coming from.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the hardest things, maybe if you haven't played football, is learning how to disengage blockers and shed them and go by them and whatever. And it's almost not even something. I mean, you can, you know, they work on it. They work on techniques and things like that. But it just seems to be a skill set that you have to have developed. And a lot of that, I think, starts with playing, you know, maybe younger than a lot of people think you should be playing. But it you know, it takes a while. And if you get engaged, no matter how strong you are or how athletic you are, if you stay engaged with those offensive linemen, you're probably not going to be in the play. They're just going to be in the way. So that's a special skill set for defensive linemen, especially to be able to, you know, just to play through people. And we haven't seen that.
All right. Let's play. We have a voicemail question for you. I'm going to play it and get your thoughts.
Hey, guys. This is Matt here from Red Bluff. I was just watching some old highlights on the Pac-12 network, and I was watching Odoree Jackson, and I was just wondering if any of you guys have seen anyone currently on the USC roster that has the kind of speed that Odoree Jackson showed. Thanks for all you guys do, and fight on.
You know, I think speed, they've got a, you know, some guys that aren't that far behind in speed. But I think what Odoree had was just a knack, a sense, an ability to change directions. He had, you know, some God-given talents of elusiveness and just a total lack of fear. And some of those things aren't necessarily directly speed related. I mean, obviously he had more speed as well, but I mean, you look at an Amon-Ra St. Brown, he's a completely different kind of athlete. I mean, he's got the same confidence, same really good hand, but he's a real thick and yet very elusive, very change directions, all of it. He's kind of a freak a little bit, I think. I was telling some people the other day that you do not expect a guy built as thick and strong as he is to have the kind of, you know, fine motor skills, the baseball hands, for example, and the eyes. I mean, he does a darn thing when he's lying on the ground face down and the ball is punted and he flips over, and he not only has to locate the ball, he has to track it down. He has to go catch it, and then he, you know, works on his punt return. I mean, we haven't ever seen anybody do that. So he's got some special things that maybe you can teach yourself, but I'm not sure anybody can teach you. But will there be somebody like Odoree? I doubt it. He had some uniqueness that the almost world class long jumper that gives you some escapability in certain situations. He had, you know, you can't have any better hips than Odoree had in terms of, you know, being able to get from here to there, however you had to move to get from here to there. You know, you're coming this way and all of a sudden you're over there. I don't know that USC should ever expect to have somebody quite like that. I mean, Odoree had it, I mean, almost, you know, better than Reggie. Reggie had it in a different way. Reggie had it in a more powerful, you know, stop-start way. But Odoree had it in a way that so I don't know if it's fair to compare anybody to Odoree, but in terms of confidence and catching the ball and being able to, make a really decisive first move and beat that first group and all that, I think right now you'd have to say that guy would be Amon-Ra.
Yeah, he's been impressive too, for sure, as a true freshman. We just got a couple more. Okay, so this one, Trojan the Barber. He said, "Hello, boys. Glad the season is back up and swinging. Thank you guys for keeping us up to date on what's going on with the USC football team for another year. What I want to know is, do you see a different attitude with the USC football team this season? Does it seem like the boys are ready to take the next step on becoming a national title team with a tough mindset. Thank you for all you do. Can't wait for the boys to get going on a hopeful national title run, starting with UNLV, Trojan the Barber.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think they are pretty unhappy with how last year turned out. And they know better than we do. I mean, we were unhappy. They were really unhappy. They know they were embarrassed as hell about the Notre Dame game. And every one of those losses, they're embarrassed as hell about those. And no, it shouldn't have turned out that way. Not necessarily that you win all of them, but that you don't go up there and play like that. And I you're really impressed with the seniors, with Cam Smith and Porter Gustin and Marvell Tell and guys that are just Iman Marshall, who are coming back and saying, look, we're not going to let this happen. And I like a Tyler Vaughns, who is kind of a quiet kid, but he's really, very much become a leader in his own way. And I'm not sure, we saw that coming. And having the quarterbacks kind of move along with them. I mean, I thought that was the big drag after spring was, what about the quarterbacks? What about them? What about them? And I think there's an upbeat sense there. Things are moving in the right direction. I mean, Aka Cedric Ware just looks so good. And then to have Stephen Carr come back, to give you that, possible star running back. And yet, you say, geez, Aka Cedric is doing everything he could possibly ask for. And then you get, a freshman like Marquis Stepp, who is at 230 pounds, has got way quicker feet and a burst and a change of direction that people are like, whoa, And he was fighting, some injuries the last couple of years in high school and maybe didn't, show that all the time. But he's really a great prospect. So things are kind of falling in place. And, there are an awful lot of guys, that can play defense. And so I think this team has a sense of we could be pretty good. I mean, for all the people and you see an awful lot of people that are picking Washington to be the team in the fourth team in the playoffs. And I think there are a lot of people at USC saying, boy, all you want to do is get into that championship game with Washington and become, the fourth team in the playoffs. I mean, I think that's a reasonable goal, for this team. Obviously, you've got to get through weeks two and three on the road. You got to get through Stanford. You got to hold Bryce Love down. You can't let Costello throw some of those things that they let him throw at the end of the championship game last year. And then you got to go to Texas and you got to be ready. That'll be Texas's Super Bowl or whatever, I would think, for Tom Herman. He needs to kind of, convince people that he's moving in the right direction and beating USC in Austin would be, the way to do it. So they got to be ready. And I do think there is an urgency. How many times have we heard Clay say a sense of urgency? And it's not just this team and these seniors, but it's these next few weeks to get ready, for the way the season opens. And they've got a chance. If they go and win at Palo Alto and they win at Austin, they will become a team that everybody in the country will say, oh, wow, they're real. They're, USC's back and all that kind of thing. And so I kind of like that challenge for them that, they're not going to be back just because people say they're back. They're going to have to show that they're actually back. And the only way they're going to be able to do that is to be more ready to play, in weeks two and three than Stanford and Texas. And if you go by many of the preseason rankings, USC isn't going to be favored in either one of those games. So that's almost the perfect scenario if you're a USC team with a chip on your shoulder, is to go into those places and win. And I just think it's set up well if they, set themselves up well. They've got a chance to be that team that can do that. But they got to get it right. They got to get everything right. They can't run a lot of plays that make no sense. They can't run the ball into, point of attack where there are more defenders than there are you know, offensive people, they've got to be smart. They can't have throwaway plays. They can't, you know, turn the ball over. They can't have all those penalties. And we got to do a lot of things right that we haven't seen them do right. And so, you know, I think a lot of the challenge is on the coaches. But I think the players look like they want the challenge, that they've taken the challenge. And I think the challenge now for me is for the coaches to get it right.
Yep, I agree with you there. I think special teams got to play better too. A lot of hidden yards. We got a couple.
Well, I mean, this is the thing. That's where I think again that's the coaching, because I mean, when you're USC, if you don't have guys that can cover kickoffs and punts, I mean, they could do it. They could have an all linebacker team to cover kickoffs right. or punts. They could have an all defensive back team. I mean, they've got enough athletes, guys who can run and tackle and all that. You got to just get them ready. I mean, you know, as far as the kickers, it'll be interesting to see what they decide to do. They can be, I think, pretty acceptable. And they're both, you know, they're both veterans. They just have to be. I think that'll probably be okay. But as far as just putting everything together, they got to get it right this year. And last year was, I mean, the punt returns itself were so discouraging that it made everything look bad. It just made it look like you were not competent. I mean, it just made it look like they don't know what they're doing. And I think that's been the key, you know, for, you know, this fall camp is having the quarterbacks come in and looking like they all can play makes you feel better about the team. I think the same thing with special teams. You got to have special teams that catch the ball, you know, when it's punted to you. And don't catch it inside the 10, but do catch it at the 20. And they kind of mixed those up, you know. They were catching it inside the 10 and missing it at the 20. And it was like, come on, this is USC. You got to be able to get these things right. And that's, again, to me, I think, a lot of that's on the coaches.
I agree with you 100%. We have a text question. He says, do you happen to know if they're going to shut off or cover up the renovation webcam during the camp sessions that will be taking place in the Coliseum? I wonder if anyone on the coaching staff knows that anyone who wants to get a full view of the field in real time 24/7, you can watch it there. That's from GoBlueSC.
Wow.
Go Blue SC is different.
That's an absolutely genius question. How smart are you? Holy criminy. Someone will be asked that question today at practice. Wow.
Pretty good,
that
huh?
is really smart. Our guys are, whoa. Oh, man, that's very smart. There might be some coaching staffs around the country disappointed about that, but
right.
That's smart. So what was our questioner's name?
Oh, that was Go Blue SC, which is an interesting name in itself.
Go Blue SC, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. A little mysty with that.
So Blue fan.
That name.
Yeah.
We used to wonder if before that, the last building, which I can't even come up with the name of it, Ryan. It was like the inner, you know, brain building or something, whatever, the one at the end of the
neuroscience center thing.
Yeah, some kind of combination neurosciences, whatever. Before that building went up, you could put a GoPro camera on your windshield and park your car in the right place, like on the fifth floor of the parking garage, and you could probably video the entire USC practice. And there were times you did wonder if there were people doing just that. You can't do it now with the new building there, but what an interesting thing that would have been if that daggone thing would have been broadcasting from the practices.
Yeah.
Huh.
That would be cool. We'll find
we
out.
We will ask. We will definitely ask.
And then our friend Joan wrote in the last one. She said, I saw on Instagram that Jamel Cook is now at another SC, South Carolina. The article said that USC tried to block him from transferring to another Pac-12 program, as well as a few others. I haven't read that yet. Cook no. questions. One, what happened to him? Two, I thought he was academically ineligible and the athletic department was hush-hushed about it for some reason. I don't want to speculate on their failures. So why did he never get a real chance to play? And three, did the coaches make a mess of it with him? Because there must be some reason they don't want to play against him, Joan Lewis. This is a great question. I've always been a Jamel Cook fan. I've always thought he was legit talent that could play. They moved him around. There's always something seemed to be going on, and it just never worked out with Jamel Cook.
Yeah, he was. Here's a kid that could play all three spots. He was big enough and athletic enough to play safety, quick enough to play corner, and obviously, if you can play both of those at 6'3", you can play in the slot in the nickel. So he could do everything. He just didn't all the time. He wasn't always available. Wasn't always around. There were scrapes where he got involved in some, off the field stuff that wasn't terrible, but it just wasn't just the kind of thing. Like if something could go wrong, it seemed to happen to go wrong with Jamel. And he was scrambling, I think, academically. I think one of the things that USC, may have tried to block him from Pac-12, which I think has been the normal thing, for interconference, intra-conference transfers, but they did have him in school because I think he had to finish up the summer, so he was still around, and you would see him every once in a while, saying hi to the guys at the PRPs and what have you. So you knew he was trying to get his grades so that he could transfer. I know the joke was that he unfortunately got a USC tattoo when he came to USC, and there was only one place he really could transfer to without having to deal with that tattoo. So I'm glad for him. A legitimate program, SEC program. He'll get a chance to go to the next level if he really gets it all together. I don't know that anybody doesn't have a good feeling about Jamel and wishes him well and all that. I think they really tried with Jamel. I just think there were things he just couldn't seem to stay on top of in order to be able to be a contributor. And I think it didn't help that he was in the same backfield at times with Jack Jones. And you had a couple of people that were just kind of outside the margins. And you can't really have that, if you want a defense, to work. Good luck for, Jamel. I don't think the USC coaches got it wrong with Jamel. I think they really tried as hard as they could because they knew, he's a good kid in a lot of ways and certainly a guy who could play. And I think they tried everything they could possibly try. And I think this is one of those cases where, a transfer and a reality check, for Jamel could be, a good thing. I mean, he came to USC. He was behind from the start because he'd been in an automobile accident and he had a broken foot. And he started out behind, and he never quite caught up. That's too bad. Wish he could have made it here, but we'll, I think, all be pulling, for him there. And I'm probably happy that he didn't have to. He's not playing for another Pac-12 team. I probably would like to see kids have, pretty much total freedom there. But as long as that's kind of the rule that everybody plays by, he still had plenty of places he could go, and as he proved by going to a pretty good, South Carolina program.
Yeah, and I didn't think he would want to stay on the West Coast anyway, but who knows, he's a Miami kid. You don't want to do that. But all right, Dan Weber, we're going to see you out there in a couple hours at practice. It just never ends. So, but I'm glad we got to squeeze in a show, and hopefully everyone enjoyed it. And if you are listening to this on Tuesday before midnight on the West Coast, make sure you take advantage of the flash sale. $10 and you get 5 months, basically the rest of the year, for just $10. So great stuff. It's a fire hose of content. I just got a tweet from someone who said they just signed up and he goes, my information went from garden hose to fire hose. So it's just like that.
All right.
But Dan, we'll see you out there. All right.
Very good. Yes, we will.
Sounds good. Well, that's Dan Weber. I'm Ryan Abraham. If you have any questions, you can email us podcast@uscfootball.com. We appreciate you listening, and we will talk to you next time.